tender and warm. Down in the Ozarks, back on the farm, I see my mother, wrinkled and gray, waiting for me at the close of the day. Hillbilly heartbeats, burdened with care, each beat a teardrop, each tear a prayer. Precious as gold, beckon me homeward, back to the fold.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here she is, May Kennedy McCord. Good morning, May.
Good morning, Jim Kendrick, me old pal. Jim, I'm not like the fella said. Wanted to say I'm glad to see you back, and he said I'm glad to see you're back. I'm glad to see your face. We couldn't run this place without you. No, it'd blow up. It's good to be here this morning to say a happy morning to all of you. I'm feeling quite a bit better, but for several days I'll tell you I wasn't one bit good. Well, we're having summer now, believe it or not. Summers come and go, and as we were rather late having hot weather, I'll bet we have a hot June, July, and August. Maybe I'm just a joy killer and ought to keep my mouth shut and not be borrowing trouble, but I do wish we could have some more rain. They say we need it badly. But anyway, hot or not, rain or not, you know, I've always told you that it takes cold and hot weather both to make a world. It takes sorrow and happiness. It takes love and hate, I guess. I hate to think it. This is June and the month of brides. Did you ever see so many pretty girls blossoming out in the newspapers? Girls of every type and size and sort and description. Well, the world goes on and love goes on, thank heaven. And mating goes on. God bless them and joy go with them. So this morning, in honor of you June brides and all the brides, I'm going to read an awfully cute favorite poem, which also has more truth in it than the writer ever guessed. It's advice to the brides, and it's titled Feed the Brute. It's good for you two gals here in the station, too. I've got two lovely married women with me, but they won't let me tell their name. Oh, it's Henry's wife, Anita, and her friend, Mrs. Lusk. Just because your hair is curly and your teeth are white and pearly and your figure's very lovely and you're cute, don't imagine for a minute this is bunk. There's something in it, this grave warning that I give you. Feed the brute. Wedded bliss is very simple. Pardon me, wait a minute. Just forget about your dimple. Mobilize your thoughts around his inner man. Study goulash and bologna and pig's feet and macaroni and get chummy with the pot and frying pan. If you'd win a loyal booster, every Sunday boil a rooster with a peck of noodles draped around his frame. Feed him waffles smeared with honey and you'll have his love and money and you'll never need to fear some other dame. Men are lugs and heels and sinners when they're hungry for their dinners. And that's the truth. And just spoiling for chance to bawl you out. But they're sweet and lovey-lavey when they're fed on steak and gravy or their tummies full of ribs and sauerkraut. Never mind your swell complexion and your eyebrows arched perfection. It's a kitchen apron now that makes you cute. It's a sad fact, but don't doubt it. There are no two ways about it. If you'd have a happy marriage, feed the brute. That's as true as God. Now, girls, that's my contribution to your wedding day, and it's the best present you'll have. Last week was Memorial Week, and as I told you, I went to my hometown for the day and also for the weekend and stayed with my sweet sister-in-law, Mabel McCord, and they never made a better. She's the widow of my late brother-in-law, Tom McCord, who was like my own brother from the time he was a small boy. He was just a lad when I married his older brother. There was rather a large family of the Dr. McCord family, and fine people they were. They're nearly all gone now, just Vinnie in California, the only girl, and Roy, the fourth child, is now living and is in his early 70s. Time marches on. This was also the day when we laureled the graves of our beloved dead and our boys who gave their lives in wars. And war is the most senseless thing on the face of the earth and useless and never settled anything and never will. The winners are the losers, a great poet said. I think he's right. We have a man here in Springfield who is a poet among the best. He writes daily for our newspaper, Bob Hunt. I'm sure you read his inspiring messages. He also writes a column on Sunday. He's a lifelong newspaper man and a friend of my dear friend, Mr. Greer of the Post-Dispatch. In honor of our beloved dead, I'm going to read a little poem of Bob Hunt's that I've had in my files for quite a while, In Memoriam. Time comes when we must bid farewell and mourn our loved ones passing on to that fair land where others dwell, who to their great reward have gone. Words of condolence fail to ease a loneliness that is forlorn, and eulogies cannot appease the grief in aching hearts that mourn. It is our darkest hour of stress when we are called to say goodbye and bear the weight of solemnness when our devoted loved ones die. Through memories we'll be consoled as time ticks off succeeding years. A sacred fondness will unfold, a comfort deeper than our tears. And we at length will understand the sorrow we are asked to bear when loved ones go to that fair land and rest in peace forever there. Thanks to Bob Hunt, poet and columnist of the First Water. Well, the dear old Pope John at last went to his rest after untold suffering and agony. He was actually dying in pain for 75 hours, they said, brave and gentle, and how he bore it. They said he tried to teach us how to live, his cardinal said, but now he's teaching us how to die. And he said, I'm going sweetly to be with Jesus. That's a very simple and beautiful message to leave to the whole world. And they said he kept naming the name of Jesus for hours and intervals, just Jesus, he would say. Pope John, who rose to great honor in this world, was born the poorest of a peasant boy. He was perhaps the most deeply loved pope of all time. He gave his life to a bird because some of them were not so beloved, but he was beloved. We have to learn to live, though. The childhood of the race is quite different. He gave his life to a burning desire for peace in the world and also for Christian unity. He goes down in the annals of history as the pope of peace and Christian unity. And had he lived a few more years, no telling what he might have accomplished for Christian unity. He did not want world unity on just his grounds. He made that very plain from the beginning, and particularly in his big ecumenical conference. And he was willing, they say, to come farther for this great unity than many of our churches were willing to go. He wanted us to be brothers with all people. His ecumenical conference was attended by hundreds of great Protestant world leaders working toward a great world Christian unity. Peace be to his soul. I loved the dear old man from the day he came into the papacy, and my family did. He was different. He was so very human, so kind to the poor and the homeless and the outcast. It said that's really all he ever cared much about. The whole world mourned the passing of this saintly old soul. God rest him. There will not be another like him. And we must remember that the greatest bulwark standing today against red communism with its atheism is the Pope of Rome. We have the guns here, and God knows we may need them, but he had the fatherhood over one half billion people in this world. 1/2 billion. And atheism will have a terrific fight making its way into those people who believe above all things in a living God and there is no changing. So do we all. Indeed we do. All the Christian world. Millions and millions and millions. I was happy to speak last Monday night at the huge banquet of the religious education leaders, a sort of convention for 3 days of the Gospel Publishing Company of the Assembly of God Churches at their big publishing house in this city. My, it was a great gathering. 350 sat at banquet tables in that huge room, people from all over the United States who came to this big convention, and some of the finest people you ever met. The music was excellent. The singers were wonderful, soloists and all. The speakers were tip-top educators, and they had a very fine program. I particularly enjoyed an Ozark Hillbilly musical skit that was the cleverest thing you ever heard. The banquet was given in Ozark style with Ozark fried chicken and just an Ozark dinner and cute hillbilly decorations and plate favors, old-time style. The whole thing was a treat. This publishing company is a great asset to our city, and we appreciate it. And the religious education part of it brings an element to our country that we need. Good luck to them. Last Sunday was a sweet day for me to get to go to my own little church in my little hometown of Galena and hear Pastor Whitmer, who serves there in the little home church. And he preached a splendid sermon. One my mother would have liked. I sat there and thought of her. Sometimes time seems to stand still, and it seems that I have not been away at all, but there I am in my little church with its beautiful stained glass windows and its bell tower and its altar from where my mother was buried, and I seem to forget time. Yes, time stands still. Things change. The world changes. We change. And I recall a little poem I think I have time to read about the little red balloon. This poem expresses it all in a way, you know. Let me close with it. I always wanted a red balloon. It only cost a dime, but Ma said it was risky. They broke so quickly. And besides, she didn't have time. And even if she did, she didn't think they were worth a dime. We lived on a farm, and I only went to just one circus and fair, and all the balloons I ever saw were there. There were yellow and blue ones, but the kind I liked the best were red, and I don't see why she couldn't have stopped and said that maybe I could have one, but she didn't. I suppose that now you can buy 'em everywhere, and that they still sell red ones at circuses and fairs. I got a plenty of money now, and I got a lot of time. I got no one to tell me how I must spend my dime. Plenty of balloons. But somehow there's something died inside of me, and I don't want one now. That's it, isn't it? Goodbye, and I'll see you next Saturday, the Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, Jim, and I can catch my pony.